Well, good morning. We greet you all in Jesus' name this morning, the one who is the shepherd of the sheep. It's good to be back with the church here at Winchester after being gone for two Sundays, being other places. It was good to be back at home. And I was glad to have some of the brothers from 4th Avenue. Glad to see that y'all came down. I was up there last Sunday. Good to have y'all here this Sunday. The message this morning is a continuation of the one I started the first Sunday of the month, and I didn't have the time to finish it. So we'll be looking again at Psalm 23. It was not my plan to split this into two messages whenever I started studying. Simply got too much material to cover in the one message, and so ended up splitting it into two. And so this morning will be the second half of Psalm 23. Before I go into it, I want to point out, as I did before, that most of this, the inspiration from this message came out of Philip Keller's book, A Shepherd Looks at Psalm 23. And if you have the book, I'd definitely recommend that you read it. It is very inspiring to see the perspective of someone who's used to working with sheep. And that's where I got most of the inspiration for this. And also, just to refresh your memory, the reason we split it into two is that there's two main sections in this psalm. In the first half, the first three verses, the psalmist is referring to a shepherd in the third person. He's talking about he. So it's as if he's talking to somebody else about the shepherd. And then in the last three verses, the psalmist is addressing the shepherd in the first person. He says, "Thou." And he talks to him one-on-one. So there's a shift in voice. But there's also a shift in the scenery between the first half and the second half. In the first half, it's calm. It's the green pastures. It's the still waters. So that would indicate that it's a place of security, a place of rest. But in the second half, we have dark valleys. We have predators. We have danger. And so there's a different perspective of what is happening to the sheep. And so I believe that this is telling the story of a sheep's life in the year of a sheep. In the springtime, when there's new grass, there's fresh grass, they can graze near the house, near the buildings, near the villages. And so there's safety. At night they go into the barn. There's security. The shepherd is at home. But then when the dry season comes, late summer, those pastures are eaten down. There's no longer any forage there. And so the shepherd takes his flock and they head for the mountains. They head for the green pastures that are high in the hills. And that's a different place. It's no longer do they have the security of the sheepfold. There's dangers. There's lions. There's coyotes. There's snakes. And so there's dangers out there in the wild the shepherd is there for. And so the voice shifts, and we have a different perspective of our shepherd through those times. We'll go ahead and read the entire psalm at this time. Psalm 23. The Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want. He maketh me to lie down in green pastures. He leadeth me beside the still waters. He restoreth my soul. He leadeth me in paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for thou art with me. Thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. Thou preparest a table before me in the presence of mine enemies. Thou anointest my head with oil. My cup runneth over. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. So we're picking up at verse 4. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death. There was a time when I understood this verse to mean our physical death. The time when we realize that we are going to die. That's out of our control. It's in God's hands. And He is there. But as I study this, I don't think that that's what he's talking about. He's talking about our physical death. For one thing, it's in the middle of the chapter, in the middle of the passage. Why would he mention dying in the middle of his thought? It doesn't fit. Also, he talks about verse 5, having a table in the presence of his enemies. So if the valley of the shadow of death is passing from this life into the next, that would mean that there's enemies in the next life. And there's not. There will be no enemies in the presence of God. There'd be peace and joy. So I believe he's talking about the valley of the shadow of death. I found it interesting. The shadow of death is one word. It's a compound word in the Hebrew, if you look it up. And it simply means, we would say, the death shadow. So it's nearby. We can see it. We know when there's a shadow, the real thing is close by. So it's a time of danger. It's a time of fear. He talks about that. I will fear no evil, will not fear calamity. So I believe David is talking about the times in our life when terrible things happen to us. Not when we die, but when we face difficult situations in life. We have that dread of what might happen. We have the fear of the future. How will this work out? Where will we turn? What do we do? I believe he's talking about the days when we wonder how we'll find the strength to go on. The days when we wonder, where is the shepherd? Why did he leave me here? What is he trying to accomplish? And we filled with these questions. Maybe we go through this valley when we lose a loved one. It's dark. We wonder why. Where is God? It may be struggle with an illness. Why me? Why did God let this happen to me? Why did God choose to take me through this valley? Maybe when a friend cuts us off, we're rejected, we're cut off, we're left out, and we have that hurt, that pain. It may be a struggle with depression, wondering, what's the purpose of life? What is God trying to accomplish? Why am I going through this valley? We find ourselves there, and we ask the shepherd, why me? And that's too often where I find myself, when I find myself in that valley. Surely, wouldn't it have been better, shepherd, if we had just taken a different road? Couldn't it have been better if we had gone a different route? Do we have to go through this valley? And yet, when you think about how you get to the top of a mountain, there's really only two options. One is to go up through a valley where it gradually slopes until you can work your way out to the top. Second option is to climb the cliff. There's really only two ways to get to the top of a mountain. And so when the shepherd leads the sheep, for a shepherd with his flock, there's only one option. They can't scale the cliffs. There's no grass on the cliffs. There's no water on the cliffs. There's no sustenance there. So the only way for a shepherd to lead his flock is to go through the valleys. It's through the sloping valleys that we reach the peaks. So it's dark. There may be shadows. There may be rocks. There may be pitfalls. We wonder why we're here. But when we're following the shepherd, we will never reach a dead end. The shepherd knows where that valley leads. The shepherd has been this path before, and he knows where he's taking us. And so he has a goal in mind, and as we're climbing through that valley, following him, we can know that there will be an outcome. It's also in the valleys where we find water and grazing. Remember the illustration of where these sheep are headed. That's their whole purpose. They're trying to find better grazing because what was behind them is no longer fit for them. And so the shepherd is leading them to find what they need. He's providing better pastures. And it's in the valleys where there's streams running, where there's fresh water, where there's fresh grass to feed the sheep. And so the shepherd is leading us where he will take care of us. Day after day, as the shepherd is leading, the sheep are following. They're working way up through the valleys. It's not easy. It's grueling. It's work. And yet the shepherd is there beside us. He has promised he will never leave us nor forsake us, even in those dark valleys. He has promised that even though the young lions do lack and suffer hunger, they that seek the Lord shall not want any good thing. For his divine power hath given unto us all things that pertain unto life and godliness. And yet there are dangers in these valleys. This is the wilderness. This is not the pastures near the village. There are mountain lions. There are snakes. There are sinkholes. There's many dangers in these valleys. And we need to be careful because we can stumble. And we can fall in these valleys. They're hard times. But there's something with us. I will fear no evil. Why? For thou art with me. The sheep have the confidence that even in these dangers, the shepherd is there beside us. A shepherd doesn't strike off for the hills with his flock for the first time. It would be foolishness. He wouldn't be prepared. No, he sets out before he takes the sheep there. When the sheep are still safe back at home, he sets out on his own and he figures out what path he's going to take. Or maybe he's an experienced shepherd who's been there many times, but he's been there. He knows the way. And so we have the confidence that he knows where he's taking us and that he is walking beside us. Let's turn to Job 23. Job 23 is in the heat of Job's distress. Verse 2, even today is my complaint bitter, my stroke is heavier than my groaning. Oh, that I knew where I might find him, that I might come even to his seat. So Job found himself in the place that I so often do where I'm complaining against my shepherd, saying, what are you doing? Why am I here? That was his heart's desire. That's what he was feeling. Verse 8, behold, I go forward, but he is not there, and backward, but I cannot perceive him. On the left hand, where he doth work, but I cannot behold him. He hideth himself on the right hand, that I cannot see him. But he knoweth the way that I take. And when he hath tried me, I shall come forth as gold. My foot hath held his steps. His way have I kept and not declined. Neither have I gone back from the commandment of his lips. I have esteemed the words of his mouth more than my necessary food. So this was his testimony, even though he felt like he couldn't understand what God was trying to do in his heart, in his life. So I look for God on the left, I look for God on the right, I asked him these questions, why are we here? He said, I don't have an answer, but I do know this. I know that he's leading. And I know that when he is done, I will be a better person. When this trial is over, I will be as gold. And he makes a commitment in verse 11 and 12. He says, even though I'm in this difficult time, I will still follow the shepherd. When I face these temptations to doubt, I need to remember that I just have the perspective of a sheep. You compare the perspective of a sheep to that of a shepherd, it's ludicrous to think that the sheep would know better. How can a dumb, four-footed animal know better than the shepherd who has the perspective of a man, who has the intelligence of a man, who's been this way before, who can see three turns ahead, and he knows the path. He knows where it's going to lead. And that's the same way it is with me and God. I have the perspective of a human. From my perspective, yes, a different path would have made more sense. It would have been better. It wouldn't have been so rocky. It wouldn't have been so rough. But God says, no, this is the path. Trust me. Psalm 119, verse 71, it is good for me that I have been afflicted, that I might learn thy statutes. So we have the promise of the shepherd's leading. Going back to Psalm 23, there's two other things that bring comfort. Thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. The rod and the staff are two specific instruments that a shepherd uses. They're distinct. The rod is a weapon. It was used as defense against predators. And that was one of the first things that a shepherd would do. If a young man decided he wanted to be a shepherd, he would go out and he'd find himself a good staff. It had to be the right weight for him, had to be the right height, but also had to be balanced. And so he'd find a stick that suited him well, and then he would begin to shape it and balance it, because it basically became an extension of his arm. It would become a club. If there was a snake, instinctively whack it, kill it. If there was a coyote or a bear, as we know that David had faced a lion and a bear, he used a sling, and he chased it away. Other shepherds would simply use a staff, and they would throw that like a javelin, so it was balanced, and they could become very skilled in their aim. If a sheep began to wander off the path, sometimes he'll throw it. He won't strike the sheep with the rod, but he'll throw it and frighten the sheep to come back into the way. So the rod was a weapon of defense against predators, against thieves, against those who had come to damage the flock. And so to the sheep, the rod is a comfort. My shepherd has a rod. There's predators out there looking to take us down. There's predators trying to get a hold of our life, but our shepherd has the power. He has the means to destroy that. We can rest in that. He will protect us. The staff, on the other hand, was an instrument solely for the comfort and protection of sheep. And I don't have a staff, but we know pretty well what a staff looks like. It has that hook on the top. And that hook was very important, because there's a couple of things a shepherd could do with it. One is, if there's a sheep walking along and the shepherd thinks maybe there's something wrong with it, he needs to inspect it. He'll reach out with that staff and hook it around its neck and drag it in close to him, where he can take a closer look and he can inspect that sheep, see if there's diseases, see if there's parasites, see if there's something wrong, why is it limping? And so he uses that staff to pull it in so he can inspect it. Another way he'd use the staff is if he's simply trying to guide a sheep. Maybe there's a gate that they're coming to, and he'll simply reach out and nudge the sheep, try to direct it. Another thing they'll do with it is if there's a lamb that's wandering from its mother or that the mother is ignoring, he can use that hook to pick up that lamb and take it closer to its mother. He doesn't want to touch it with his hands for fear that the sheep will smell the human and reject that lamb, but he can use his rod as an extension of himself to interact with his sheep, to care for them. So our shepherd has a rod for our protection, for our defense, but he also has a staff to guide us, to direct us, and to protect us, to care for us. And so we can take comfort in these things. Isaiah 40, verse 10 and 11. Behold, the Lord God will come with a strong hand, and his arm shall rule for him. Behold, his reward is with him, his work is before him. He shall feed his flock like a shepherd. He shall gather the lambs with his arm and carry them in his bosom, and shall gently lead those that are with young. And Isaiah 41, verse 10, fear thou not, for I am with thee. Be not dismayed, for I am thy God. I will strengthen thee, yea, I will help thee. Yea, I will uphold thee with the right hand of my righteousness. So when we're in these dark times, when we're worried about the predators, when we're fearful, when we're wondering what tomorrow will bring, when we're asking, why am I in this valley? We can have the comfort of knowing our shepherd is beside us, knowing that he has the tools for our defense, and he has the tools for our comfort and our assistance. Moving on now to verse 5. Thou preparest a table before me in the presence of mine enemies. And that word table is the same as everywhere else in the Old Testament, where they built tables in the tabernacle, had tables to eat off of. But I think in the context of the shepherd and the sheep here, this refers to the high mountain pastures, the tablelands as they call them. Or in Western United States, we call them mesas, which is the Spanish word for table. And so I believe that's what he's referring to. The shepherd prepares the table. We talked earlier about how the shepherd would go out before he took the sheep and prepare the area for the sheep to graze. When he went up there, I'm getting ahead of myself. I did a little bit of research on the tablelands, and I found it fascinating that this thing of migrating sheep because of the different seasons is something that is found the entire way around the world. In Asia, they do it with the highlands in Mongolia. In the Middle East, in Europe, you think of the high mountain pastures in Switzerland and in Austria and the Alps. I found that interesting that in Switzerland, about 35% of all their farmland, think about that, 35% of the entire country's farmland is these high mountain pastures. So if they didn't have these high mountain pastures in the Alps, they'd be missing a third of their pasture land for their animals, and so it would significantly cut down on what they could produce. So it's a major part of their farming economy. The most extreme level that is in the highlands in Pakistan, that'd be in the Himalayan mountain range. And that in that area, there's a certain group of people that travel around with their flocks, and they say that, according to the Encyclopedia Britannica, they have maybe four or five different houses as they travel up. And the highest pastures are about 14,000 feet. That just blows my mind, how you could have pasture land that high. Just for reference, our mountains here are about 3,000 feet. So you're talking about four times higher than where we live. They're keeping sheep and goats, and they're living there, and they're following these sheep around, traveling with them, and looking after their sheep. That's part of their culture. It's part of their economy. And so that's the picture here that David is painting. That's the lifestyle he's referring to. And so the shepherd would go there beforehand, and he would check out this pasture land and make sure that it was prepared for the sheep. He would look out for noxious weeds. He doesn't want to get there and have half of his sheep get sick because they're feeding on poisonous plants. So if they would see a lot of poisonous plants, he'd take the time, he'd root them out, and he would get that land ready for his sheep. He also would make sure that there was clean water available. He'd check out the springs. If they had been blown shut with leaves and sticks, he'd clean it out. That way, when the sheep got there, they had plenty of water to drink. He also would make sure they had secure shelter. Jesus told that story in John 10, where he said, "I am the door." And basically what they would do, they would look around for a natural shelter if they could find one. If they couldn't find one, they would, you know, throw up piles of rocks, put brambles on top, make some sort of enclosure where the sheep can go for the night, and then the shepherd would lay down in the door. This is not like in the valley where they have a secure barn where they can put the animals away overnight. This is out in the wild. It's temporary. It's for a couple months while this pasture lasts. And so the shepherd would go there beforehand and make sure everything is prepared. That way when the sheep come, they have food to eat, they have plenty of water, and they're going to be healthy, and they're going to grow. The shepherd's also looking for signs of predator activity. He's looking for bears, mountain lions, wild dogs. He's looking for things that are going to be preying on the sheep. He needs to know beforehand what kind of other animals are in that area. He might need to bring along extra help if there are signs of heavy predator activity. And so he's checking these things out. Last thing he wants to do is bring his sheep up here to provide a meal for somebody else. That's not his goal. He wants to keep them safe and take them back at the end of the season. And so the shepherd is coming there, and he's preparing for the sheep. And the same is true of our shepherd. The shepherd has gone before us. He has gone the way ahead of us. He knows what we're going to face. Hebrews 4, verse 14, Brother Mike read this on Friday evening, his devotions. "Seeing then that we have a great high priest that is passed into the heavens, Jesus, the Son of God, let us hold fast our profession. For we have not an high priest which cannot be touched with the feeling of our infirmities, but was in all points tempted like as we are, yet without sin. Let us therefore come boldly unto the throne of grace, that we may obtain mercy and find grace to help in time of need." Our shepherd has been there ahead of us. He knows what it's like to face these trials. He knows what it's like to be a human and to struggle with the flesh. He has gone and prepared the way for us so they can be a comfort. Even though the war is raging, even though the lions are roaring, our shepherd knows, and he's here to protect us. Fourthly, still in verse 5 there, "Thou anointest my head with oil." I found it interesting There's a couple different reasons that a shepherd would anoint the sheep. First, the ointment protects the sheep from aggravations. There's many pests, there's many insects that afflict the sheep. We have the flies that we talked about a little bit in the last message. There's a fly that will lay its eggs in the nose of the sheep. And when it hatches, the larva burrows into the skin and will go up underneath the skin of the sheep and creates intense irritation. The sheep will rub it, it'll scratch it, trying to get rid of it, and sometimes the sheep will actually hurt themselves, will make themselves blind, or even kill themselves just trying to get rid of this irritation. Simple way to prevent that is to make an ointment, make some oil. Philip, in his book, said he liked to use, I think it was sulfur and turpentine, sound like a pretty potent mixture of a salve that he would put on there. But basically, it would prevent the fly from laying its eggs there. It would deter that. And so then the sheep could go about its life peacefully. It wasn't bothered by these parasites. There's other irritants. There's mosquitoes. There's gnats. There's other pests. And so they will irritate the sheep and they'll damage the sheep. And so he would anoint his head to protect them from these pests. Second reason that a shepherd might anoint a sheep would be to prevent scab. Scab is caused by a little mite. And it attaches to the skin, lays its eggs on the skin, and then if it's not caught soon enough, it just proliferates. And the irritation will make the sheep constantly scratch, trying to get rid of this skin mite. And those, if not treated quickly, one sheep can spread it throughout the rest of the herd because they're constantly in contact with each other. They're rubbing against each other, they're eating the same grass, and so these mites will spread if not caught quickly. And so the shepherd needs to catch the mites, and he needs to see that irritant and treat it the way his sheep are healthy. If it's let go, if it's not caught, it can lead to the sheep actually losing their wool, which makes them susceptible to other diseases. And so the shepherd needs to be constantly on the lookout for these pests that will hurt his sheep. And the last one that he mentioned in his book was an entirely new idea to me. But he mentions how rams like to fight in breeding season. And so what he would do is he would take axle grease and smear it on their heads before they went to fighting. And that was so they wouldn't kill each other, because when the rams are out to show that who's boss, they will fight until one of them gives in and possibly one of them is killed. He didn't want to lose his valuable rams, and so he would smear grease on their foreheads and down their noses. So they would come running at each other and then just bounce off, and they would slide right past. They couldn't hurt each other because they didn't have the means to. He had anointed them, so he kept them from damaging each other. And so the same is true of our shepherd. He anoints our heads with oil. He doesn't want us to beat each other up. He doesn't want us to take each other out, rather to be a flock and to work together. So our shepherd heals our diseases. He is a remedy for the pests of worldliness and the parasites of carnal desires that we face. Isaiah 53, verse 5. He was wounded for our transgressions. He was bruised for our iniquities. The chastisement of our peace was upon him, and with his stripes we are healed. And that was what Jesus told the Pharisees when they wondered why he was hanging out with the lowlifes. He said, people who aren't sick don't need a doctor. He said, I came to heal those who are sick. And he has the remedies for when we knock heads with each other. In Matthew 23, verse 11, he says, he that is greatest among you, let him be your servant. So if we're here to serve, if we're here to help, we can avoid knocking heads. Romans 12, verse 3, he said, for I say the grace given unto me, to every man that is among you, not to think of himself more highly than he ought to think, but to think soberly, according as God hath dealt to every man the measure of faith. And then he goes on to talk about the different offices in the church and how each one is needed to fill their place. So if we recognize who we are in God's sight, we recognize who we are in the sight of our shepherd, then we can pull together, we can be a blessing to each other. Lastly, in verse 5, the last one in verse 5, is my cup runneth over. As sheep of the true shepherd, we are abundantly blessed. We have more than enough. We have enough to spare because our shepherd meets our needs. He provides for us. He treats our diseases. our afflictions. He shelters us in the storms. He protects us from the predators. What more can we ask for? I mean, look at society around us and what they're looking for. They're looking for security. They're looking for assurance that I will be okay tomorrow. They're looking for someone to answer the deepest needs, and they can't find it. They search it in wealth. They search in work. They search in fame. There's so many places, and they're coming up empty. But as sheep of the true shepherds, our cup is full. It's full, clear, up to the brim. What more can we ask for? Proverbs 10, verse 22, the blessing of the Lord, it maketh rich, and he addeth no sorrow with it. Psalm 103, verse 2, bless the Lord, O my soul, and forget not all his benefits, who forgiveth all thine iniquities, who healeth all thy diseases, who redeemeth thy life from destruction, who crowneth thee with loving kindness and tender mercies, who satisfieth thy mouth with good things, so that thy youth is renewed like the eagles. Truly, we are blessed. Our cup is full. Our cup is running over. In verse 6, we have, surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life. You just read that, it sounds like it's pretty calm. Follow means to come along after in the way we use it. But if you look this word up, most of the time in the Old Testament, this Hebrew word is translated pursue. So this is not the picture of an afternoon stroll. This is a picture of a chase. Goodness and mercy will pursue me all the days of my life. Several years ago, I had the privilege of watching the sheepdog trials. I think there might be a term for it, but the sheepdog trials down here at Belgrove Plantation, where they have a herd of sheep, and the purpose is to see how well that dog can listen to the commands of its master. And it's just incredible to watch those border collies run, and they're well-trained. They can take that herd of sheep, and they can manipulate it doing exactly what the master tells them to do. All he does is whistle. He uses different tones, different pitches, different bursts, and that dog instinctively reacts. So if the sheep begins to wander off, the dog will cut out in front of it and bring it back. And so that's the mind picture I have here of being pursued by goodness and mercy. These are the shepherd's two sheepdogs, the goodness of the Lord and his mercy. If we begin to wonder, he sends that dog after us, and he brings us back in his goodness. When he brings us back, he forgives us in his mercy. The dog is, trying to think how to say, he's not exactly a threat to the sheep, and that's because he's under the leadership of the master, but he's a little bit scary. The sheep is not exactly comfortable with that dog, with the way it's chasing it, what it's making it do, but it's at the control of the master. The same is true in our lives, in his goodness and his mercy. It's not always comfortable to us. What God does to us is not always the way we would like it to be. It doesn't feel the way we want it to feel. But God is there. He's pursuing us with his goodness and his mercy. He's bringing us back when we stray. He's healing us when we get hurt. He's there. He's pursuing us. And then we have the conclusion, I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. And this is the testimony of a satisfied sheep. I'm not looking to go anywhere else. I have protection. I have food. I have water. I have a shepherd who loves me, a shepherd who cares for me. I'm content. I don't wish to be out there on the mountains alone. There's freedom out there. You can do what you want. But there's vulnerability out there. There's danger. You're not protected. You're not sheltered. And so the sheep has looked at that and he said, I'm happy. I will dwell here forever. It's also words of confidence in his master. He knows that his shepherd will not change. And that's what Jesus said. Him that cometh to me, I will no wise cast out. He knows that his place in the flock is secure. His shepherd will not say, I'm done. I no longer have time for you. No, his shepherd's there. You're here? Stay here. I want you here. And the sheep is secure in his place in the fold. The sheep also loves to be with his shepherd. He's nothing to hide. He's nothing to fear. He's not afraid. He's in the presence of his master, and he is secure. Let's turn over to Revelation 22. Revelation 22, verse 3. And there shall be no more curse, but the throne of God and of the Lamb shall be in it, and his servants shall serve him. That's us. That's the sheep serving that shepherd for all of eternity. And they shall see his face, and his name shall be in their foreheads. And there shall be no night there. And they need no candle, neither light of the sun, for the Lord God giveth them light. And they shall reign forever and ever. So this is the result of the sheep that follow the shepherd. We can be with him forever and ever. So I was challenged as I studied this. Looked at the greatness and the goodness of our shepherd. He's worthy of our confidence. He is capable of taking us through the difficult times. He is here for us to guide us, to protect us. It's a privilege to be one of his flock. Let's kneel for prayer.